Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 142, Knowns and Unknowns. Space science, like any science, is full of knowns and unknowns, and that is unlikely to ever change. First up, we're going to consider a fundamental particle that really might exist, but at this point in history, that is still unknown. Dear Cheap Astronomy, do gravitons exist? Once again, we're dealing with something hypothetical here. So, much like particle pairs that can pop out of nowhere and evaporate black holes, it's entirely possible that gravitons exist, but at this point in history, it's probably appropriate to entertain the notion that they might not exist. 10 years ago, we would have said the same thing about the Higgs boson, but that was positively identified by the Large Hadron Collider in 2012, which hence moved it from being a hypothetical particle to a real particle. The case for the existence of gravitons is strong, where three of the four known forces, electromagnetism and the strong and weak nuclear forces, are all mediated by particles, being the photon for the electromagnetic force, the gluon for the strong nuclear force, and the W and Z bosons for the weak nuclear force. So it makes sense that the fourth force, gravity, should also be mediated by a particle, that is, the graviton. The problem is that gravity is the weakest force. Indeed, at the subatomic level, it's hundreds of thousands of times weaker than the other forces. So, presuming gravitons do exist, they operate at very, very low energy levels, which hence makes them extremely difficult to detect. The standard line is that a detector the size of Jupiter would be unable to detect a graviton even if it was placed in the proximity of a neutron star, which generates tremendous amounts of gravity and hence should also generate lots of gravitons. Freeman Dyson said that if we built a machine big enough to detect gravitons, it would collapse under its own mass and form a black hole. So, it's unlikely we are going to positively identify a graviton anytime soon. Of course, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. But until you do have such evidence, it's best to keep running with the hypothetical label. And there is something of a case for the non-existence of gravitons as well. According to general relativity, gravity isn't a force at all. So rather than the Earth holding the Moon in orbit via an invisible force, the Earth's mass changes the geometry of space-time, which results in the Moon's trajectory following a roughly circular path around the Earth. It's still feasible to envision gravitons mediating gravity by acting directly on space-time rather than between the two massive objects, but that means that gravity works in a completely different way to any of the other forces, since those forces involve interacting particles exchanging force-mediating particles. And that's a problem for gravity, because space-time is not composed of particles. The mathematics of quantum-level interactions is also difficult to apply to a gravitational context, since that mathematics assumes that such interactions happen against a fixed background of space and time. However, general relativity tells us that there is no such fixed background. Instead, space and time will be measured differently between different frames of reference. So, an external observer will observe clocks running slower and lengths contracting deep within a gravity well, just as they would on a fast-moving spaceship. This is what people refer to as the great schism of modern physics. General relativity works brilliantly at explaining the physics of large-scale events, and quantum physics works brilliantly at explaining the physics of subatomic events, but no one has managed to yet reconcile the two. It's been proposed that the solution may be a quantum theory of gravity, sometimes referred to as a theory of everything, and the graviton would certainly play a central role in such a theoretical reconciliation. Currently, string theory seems to be a favoured solution, although string theory itself is a totally hypothetical construct with an internally consistent mathematical and conceptual model, but it's a model that is yet to be shown to have any connection with the real world or with any measurable phenomenon within the real world. Of course, that is the nature of theoretical science. Everyone bounces ideas around until someone can figure out an experiment that will effectively demonstrate that some part of that hypothetical construct is actually real. For now, the best thing to say is that we just haven't landed this yet.
This is the middle bit.
It's perhaps not surprising that we remain unsure of the existence of the one particle that might resolve one of the biggest theoretical conflicts in physics. Next up, we deal with some well-known things, although some of them still have unknown features.
Dear Cheap Astronomy, is the universe full of explosions? Well, yes, it does seem that way. There are various classes of novae, including supernovae, but also bursts of various kinds, ranging from radio to gamma ray bursts. These different happenings have traditionally been classified separately, although the boundaries of those classifications often blur. The word nova means new, arising from the fact that when a nova happens, a star may seem to appear out of nowhere due to a sudden transient brightening. A standard nova occurs in binary star systems, in which one star is a white dwarf that gravitationally draws material off its binary companion star, which is a red giant. When large clumps of material fall to the surface of the white dwarf, there's a nuclear explosion, which temporarily enhances the brightness of the star by about 1,000 times. Then you can get killer nova, which are about 1,000 times brighter than a nova, and which probably arise from the merger of two compact objects, like a neutron star and a black hole, or two neutron stars, or even two black holes. There is an explosion involved, but it's generally cut short as the merger creates a new black hole. After that, you get supernovae, which are mostly massive stars detonating at the end of their hydrogen fusion main sequence period. Supernovae may be 1,000 times as bright again as killer novae, although there's quite a range of supernovae, from bright to very bright, all depending upon the size of the progenitor star. One notable exception are type 1a supernovae, which can be the end result of a binary system that initially just produced novae. But as more and more matter is loaded onto the white dwarf from its binary companion, the white dwarf's mass may eventually exceed the Chandrasekhar limit, and then kablooey, where the resulting explosion is always of the same scale with the same intrinsic brightness, hence leading to supernovae 1a's role as standard candles for universal distance measurement. And then there's gamma ray bursts. GRBs are long or short, being either less or more than 2 seconds in duration. Short GRBs probably arise from the merger of two compact objects, like neutron stars or black holes. In other words, they essentially arise from killer novae. And then there's long GRBs, which all arise from supernovae. The difference is that we are dealing with the polar jets that arise from these explosive events, rather than just the general brightening of the star itself. To explain, when you have a rapidly spinning object, within which powerful magnetic forces are operating, much of that object's energy output will be channeled into beams that shoot out in opposite directions from each pole. This can be the case with a massive star that goes supernova, or when two compact objects spiral into a merger. So, while we may see supernovae going off all over the sky, when one is aligned just right so that one of its polar jets is directed at Earth, we'll also record a long gamma ray burst, or otherwise a short gamma ray burst in the case of a kilonova. One of the brightest observed long GRBs, 080319B, which happened in 2008, was naked eye visible in the night sky, being as bright as a dim star. This is pretty remarkable, given that the burst's origin was 7.5 billion light-years away. Although, when you're talking about such distances, it's better to say that the burst occurred 7.5 billion years ago, as its origin would have since shifted substantially further away due to the ongoing expansion of the universe. After that, things get a bit more random. There are fast optical transient events, including blue and red ones, that are smaller bursts of energy, still bigger than a nova, but smaller than a supernova. These are presumably some kind of stellar outburst, or perhaps the merger of two main sequence stars, but because they are more infrequent, it's been harder to nail them down to a specific cause. Similarly, there are the mysterious fast radio bursts, of which there's been about 1,000 detected since 2007, when they were first categorized as a thing. Possible causes are magnetar outbursts, or perhaps some kind of collision of the kilonova type, but given the variability of fast radio bursts, which can be fast, ultra-fast, and sometimes repeat, it's most likely they arise from quite a range of different causes. So, even though we currently think visible matter is only 5% of the contents of the universe, it's a pretty lively 5%.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Our universe is full of bangs, big and small. And our knowledge of it does remain patchy, with lots of known unknowns, but probably also lots of unknown unknowns. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to have your own stellar outburst, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll acknowledge the gravity of the situation. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.